How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is Sunday. We got a lot of stuff to get into, as always, here on the show. Last night was UFC on Fox. Benson Henderson versus Gilbert Melendez in the main event of the show. And as Dana White noted after the show, it is your typical Benson Henderson fight. Goes to a decision, and it's close and controversial. That's exactly what happened last night. We're going to talk about that fight. We'll give you our thoughts on who we believe won that fight. What is coming next for Benson Henderson? Are they doing a rematch? Is another guy on the docket for Benson Henderson down the road? Also, all of the results of all of the fights on the show. How did Daniel Cormier do against Frank Mir? How did Nate Diaz do against Josh Thompson? A lot of interesting fights on the show. It tied the record for the most knockouts for a UFC event ever. Most knockouts on a single show tied the record. So we'll talk about that show. Plus, this coming Saturday night, it is Chael Sonnen versus John Jones. Chael Sonnen building up this fight with old school grappling promos from Portland Wrestling. John Jones building up the fight with pretty much the only thing apparently you can think of, that it being accusing Chael Sonnen of being on steroids throughout his entire career. We're going to talk about that fight, all of the fights on that show as well. How do you think that show is going to do? We'll talk about that. Plus, a lot of pro wrestling news. The latest on Rock and his abdominal injuries, which he was going to try to work through without getting surgery. Apparently, as happens many times in WWE, those plans have changed. We'll talk about the WWE Training Center that they have just opened up down in Orlando, Florida. They've got a new hub where everybody wants to be a WWE superstar. That's your goal in life, to get to this hub. We're going to talk about that, plus an update on CM Punk and his knee injury. What happened? When may he be back? A lot of other details, plus John Cena versus Ryback is coming up. Talk to you about that match for Extreme Rules and so much more. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live. Back in just a moment, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 794, Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, sometimes Sirius Channel 92, streaming worldwide on the internet, WrestlingObserver.com, Sports Byline USA Radio Affiliates, and Sports Byline on the TuneIn Radio app. If you download it for your smartphone, you can find the TuneIn Radio app and check it out. Want to send a shout out here to my father, Mike. My mom and dad just had their 40th wedding anniversary yesterday, in fact. And my wife and I went over and brought them a giant flower. I don't even know what kind it was, but it was very large. And my dad is sitting there dinking around on a laptop, and my mom notes that he loves a laptop. He listens to Sirius Satellite Radio on it all the time. And I said, "You ever listen to my show?" And there's a long pause, and he says, "You have a show?" And I said, "Yes." "On Sirius?" "Yes." "I did not know that." And I was like, "Well, there you go. There's my family." So I gave him all the info. "Dad, you better be listening today." And he's going to be listening to a show talking about a bunch of stuff that he doesn't know anything about, such as last night's UFC on Fox. Mike, what'd you think of that show?
Well, before that, that's not true. I mean, you know, if your father happens to call in later on or wants to send in a question about last night's Canelo Alvarez Austin Trout fight.
That's right.
That would be something he would be interested in, but I'd like to welcome Mr. Alvarez to the show, and I'd like to also thank Granny, who is a regular listener to the show, so at least you have some family support that way.
That's right, that's right. I know Granny's listening. She never misses a show. So, UFC on Fox, Mike, what'd you think?
I thought it was a good show. I mean, it was a lot of people had talked about it, and you talked about Sonnen and Jones coming up on this Saturday. And that, you know, when it was announced was, you know, even though it was a mismatch, I think at the time it was announced, it was an exciting Interesting fight for a lot of different reasons. Some of the least of which would be what would take place in the ring as far as the matchup goes. But as time went on, people looking at that show kind of looked at the UFC on Fox show and thought, you know, that's going to be the show to watch from top to bottom, especially on the main card. I don't think anyone expected it for it to be as great as it was, as far as, you know, if you like knockouts, this was the show for you. They tied the UFC record, having 8 of them. And the main show that took place for the, you know, national audience to see and the average sports fan to see, I think really did its job, you know, right from Jump Street with the first fight that was aired. It ended up being a really, really good night.
The main event of the show was a championship match. It was Gilbert Melendez against Benson Henderson for the UFC 155-pound title. Melendez, of course, was the longtime Strikeforce 155-pound champion, coming in for what was essentially a title unification match. And they went 5 rounds, as always with Ben Henderson fights. 5 very close rounds. And at the end of the day, Ben Henderson got the decision. Gilbert Melendez, a lot of people infuriated by this decision. Obviously, it was in his hometown, this show. And so the hometown crowd absolutely hated Benson Henderson. A lot of people watching at home believe that that Gilbert Melendez won. Dana White thought Benson Henderson won. In a close fight like this, we've said a million times, in a close fight, you can't complain. You got to flip a coin. It's essentially like flipping a coin. You're depending on judges who are sitting there. They're all seeing different things. In a close fight, it can go either way. Melendez afterwards talked about how he'd sort of, I can't remember the exact term he used this morning, but, essentially he stepped back the intensity a bit, I guess, thinking that, he had enough rounds in the, he had enough rounds won that he was going to get the decision. And I just found that just the most preposterous statement I've ever heard a fighter make, especially somebody who's been champion for so long. You
took
never
his foot
coast.
Off the gas, right?
Yeah, took his foot off the gas. Why would you ever do that in a fight? I mean, ever. And to me, if you believe that you've won 4 rounds, 10-8, you do not coast in that 5th round because you have no idea what these judges are thinking. You have absolutely no idea. You could have complete numbskulls who don't know how to add. Or perhaps they are confused which one of you is Ben Henderson and which one of you is Gilbert Melendez, which I'm almost positive has happened at least once in the is in Bellator. I don't think there was a judge who very clearly had no idea which guy was which, and he gave the other guy all of the other guy's scores. But the point is, you have no idea who's sitting at that table. You have no idea what they're thinking. You have no idea. You don't listen to your corner telling you that you're ahead. Never listen to anybody. Finish the fight. And if it is going to a decision, then you need to fight as hard as you can every single round. So hopefully you convince the judges that you won like 10-5 in each round. But anyway, when I heard that, it was just like, well, you know, too bad for you. I was open to the idea of giving you a rematch, but after that statement, it's just like, nah. Well, and I don't like the alternative, mind you. But still, I don't know what to say with that kind of idea about taking the foot off the gas.
Yeah, maybe you're taking it more to heart than you really should, as far as maybe what he intended to say, you know, and being a little bit shocked after the fight. But yeah, but really, you are right. The thing is, it's probably a little bit of shock from his point of view, because a lot of people thought Melendez won, you know, kind of look at Henderson and go, well, you know, what did he do? I mean, you know, yeah, he kind of tried to steal the end of the rounds and everything, but even though he was more active sometimes with knees and stuff like that, he couldn't take Melendez down. And Melendez, I guess, you know, a lot of what it comes down to, too, is did Gilbert Melendez take the title from Ben Henderson? And I guess if when all things come out to be a draw, I think you have to look at that, and that's what happened in this case, and that's what happens in a lot of Henderson's fights. You know, I think, you know, some of the Edgar, you know, Edgar was a little bit more controversial than this one, just because, you know, they were two really well-matched, even guys, and Gilbert Melendez certainly didn't embarrass himself. I definitely want to see a rematch, but, yeah, I don't know how anybody can be too sad either way, to be honest. It's just, again, it was a good fight, but, yeah, nothing to really complain about, although, I think maybe what he said isn't his intention wasn't as how you're taking it. Because, I mean, he didn't, it's not like he really super cruised or anything like that, but I don't know.
It was both of their faults in the last 20 seconds of the fight when it's a razor close fight. There's 20 seconds left, and they both stood there.
That's the thing. The fifth round, the entire fifth round itself was a great disappointment. I thought a great disappointment that way. Although, you know, a lot of people gave Henderson the third round, and it's like that was a close round and everything. But, you know, I was on the border about that round. And frankly, to me, the only round that Henderson clearly won was the fourth. So if anybody had Melendez 4-1, that wouldn't have shocked me either. Because, again, Henderson is just as much as fault as Melendez was as far as kind of taking the foot off because, yeah, he did, you know, he threw, but it's not like he was super effective doing so. And he was just equally, you know, this was equal to Melendez.
Cesar Gracie's camp has had a run of very, very bad luck. And I'm sure there are a lot of different reasons for it. Maybe the Diaz brothers have a very predictable style that never changes. You figure out what the style is, and guys have been beating them. I mean, Jake Shields in the corner just telling Melendez that, you know, you're up, I think he said, like, you're up two rounds in the third or something like that. I was like, dude, what is up with these corners? I mean, come on. You can't tell, you never tell a guy he's up. You don't know. You have no idea if the guy is up. Yeah, maybe you're watching your guy and it looks like he's doing great, but it's a close fight. You never tell the guy he's up. You go, you got to go out there and win every round. So you got to tell the guy.
That's not true. There's a way to say it. The way to say it is, you know, you look good and you can give him a little bit of confidence in saying that, you know, yeah, you won that round, but then you actually have to do something after that, which it doesn't seem like they did.
So anyway, that was the main event, and the winner of TJ Grant and Gray Maynard, I'm not making this up, the winner of TJ Grant and Gray Maynard at UFC 160 is going to be the new challenger for the Benson Henderson 155-pound title. Now, we'll talk about this after the break. I personally, it's fine. It is not at all a marquee fight. There will be no interest from the casual fan. And more so, what about Josh Thompson? He looked awesome last night. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer, and you'll find the show live every Sunday plus archive, so make sure you check that out. We're talking UFC on Fox and the upcoming TJ Grant Gray Maynard fight, which will determine a new number one contender for Ben Henderson. At least that's the claim. What are your thoughts on that fight, Mike?
I don't have much of a problem with it. I know Gray Maynard's always attached to Frankie Edgar and everything, and going, you know, 1-1-1 with him. I know it's not that flashy or great of a matchup for a lot of people, and I know there's other people in that division because it's so packed, and there's so many good guys fighting there. As you mentioned, Josh Thompson, after his performance against Nate Diaz, you know, and he's not even ranked, should now certainly be in the mix and everything. But, you know, Gray Maynard, he and Edgar had some really, really good fights, and he has beaten Nate Diaz, and he was in a fight of the year, you know, against Edgar. He's beaten Clay Guida, and, you know, Guida in that fight, you know, again, maybe Guida gave Maynard more of the fight than anything just from how he fought, but the fact is he beat him, and I know he's not the flashiest thing out there or anything like that, but from a sporting point of view, I'm interested to see Gray Maynard and Ben Henderson and to see that fight, so I really don't have a problem with it whatsoever, and I'm not trying to discount TJ Grant or anything like that, but, you know, it's a good problem to have in that division in that there's so many guys that you'd like to see Henderson fight against for the title, and also too for the amount of boost that Henderson got, and that was amplified a little bit by being in, you know, Gilbert Melendez's city and everything. One thing you can say about Henderson in a lot of these close fights and everything, it's not like he's a plodding heavyweight boxer that is dragging out guys to decisions or anything like that. And, you know, the reason Henderson gets in a lot of these things is because he is such a good, fun matchup for a lot of different guys. And, you know, hey, if they decided to flip the whole script and they're not going to do this and give us Henderson and Thompson, hey, I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah, someone on Twitter asked what's next for Melendez. I mean, all annoyances aside about whatever his comments were last night at the press conference, I mean, I would have done Ben Henderson, Gilbert Melendez too. And if you're not going to do that fight, and you're not going to do Ben Henderson against Josh Thompson, which would be my second choice, then God forbid, and I know Gilbert Melendez would hate this, but Melendez-Thompson 4, the winner getting a rematch.
I hate to say this because it's you know, I remember there was a debate in Strikeforce. They were going to have a fight, and I remember there were two fights I didn't really want to see. But if all things came down to even, I would take Melendez-Thompson 4. And it's kind of the same way in the UFC. I mean, if you're the UFC, it's not a bad fight to make. I mean, people love trilogies and multiple fights and a lot of that stuff. And, you know, UFC can market this almost WWE style. Do it with new eyes and new everything and kind of make it their own and not discount the fact that everything had happened on CBS with Strikeforce, but just kind of, you know, make it new again and make it their own and put that fight out there, because I think it's, again, with the UFC telling the story, I don't think it'll be old. And the bottom line is, when it comes time for it, which would probably be in the fall, they'll be on Fox Sports 1 and all that other stuff. So I think it would be a good story to have out there.
Yeah, I think that based on how close last night's fight was, I think if Henderson beats Melendez again, I'm sorry, if Melendez beats Thompson again, I think that should make him the number one contender. And if Thompson, after last night's victory over Nate Diaz, first man in history to finish Nate Diaz, knocked him out with a high kick, I think if he beats Melendez, then he should be the number one contender. So I think that'd be a great fight. Obviously, you can't do it at UFC 160. So I guess if you want to do the TJ Grant Gray Maynard as a stopgap in between, you can do that. But I believe that Melendez and Thompson will be an awesome fight, and give the winner of that the championship match against the winner of Grant Maynard Henderson, whoever ends up in that championship match.
Yeah, down the line, who you can do Diaz, Maynard again, depending on what happens with Maynard's fight with Edge. But again, it's a good problem to have in that division. And, you know, about Josh Thompson, I picked him in the fight more so because I just don't think Nate Diaz has been the same fighter in his last couple of fights. I wouldn't have fallen over shocked if Diaz had won or anything, but I was really surprised with the way the Thompson took it to him right off the bat. And, you know, the high kick that stunned him, and then later on in the second round, the one that basically went out there and finished him. And, again, really impressive performance, and that was a really, again, the first two fights were, to me, a perfect way to start the UFC on Fox show.
Yeah, I picked Thompson. I just thought that I think Nate Diaz is a very good fighter, and I think he's less of a numbskull than his brother. But I just Josh Thompson, I've always felt, has been like a really, really, really good fighter, but he's always been hampered by injury. And even if you watch like the clips they had of some of Josh Thompson's fights in Strikeforce, I mean, I think I scored his last Gilbert Melendez fight for Thompson, even though Melendez actually got the win. I thought Thompson won the fight, but I mean, you could just see him. He didn't look like Sakuraba. That's kind of an exaggeration, but he did have both knees taped up and supported, and he was the walking wounded for so long. He had fights where like he couldn't run at all, and all he could do for cardio was swim. That's how bad his knees were. And then he went in there and fought and had great fights despite not being able to do the proper amount of cardio, being injured, and obviously everybody's injured going into a fight, but not to the degree that he was. And he still had awesome fights. And I was just thinking, okay, Thompson has not fought in a long time. He's probably coming in for once in his life close to 100%. He's a very good fighter. And Nate Diaz is as well, but I don't think he's beating a healthy Josh Thompson. And he didn't. And Thompson looked great, And I don't know if Josh Thompson can beat Ben Henderson, but I'd sure like to see that fight. I think that fight would be awesome. And it probably actually would go five rounds and be very close and be a controversial decision. I don't care. I'd like to see that fight.
Yeah, another thing is, too, what if Anthony Pettis goes down, has a really good fight with Aldo, but loses?
You can bring him back up, but I wouldn't. I don't know if I'd bring him back up and immediately give him a championship match.
Well, I don't know. Again, I guess with Diaz, again, Diaz losing, and, you know, he had said something to Dana White after the fight, and in the press conference, I forget who it was, Karen Bryan asked what it was about, and Dana just said it was personal and went on from there. But, you know, it would be interesting. I don't know. It would be interesting, again, because, again, if Ben Henderson, you know, goes out and beats, you know, the Grant Maynard winner, and it's a good fight, but let's just say he loses to Aldo. I mean, there's the one thing, again, another story and another fact that Pettis has already beaten Henderson, and Pettis was kind of waiting on a title shot and then dropped down to face Aldo so he could actually get another title shot. So, I don't know if maybe if you immediately do it, but again, that wouldn't hurt my feelings either.
So as noted, Thompson knocked out Nate 3 minutes, 24 seconds of the first round. This was a great fight. And also on the main card, Daniel Cormier in a horrendous fight that everybody on all sides has admitted was horrendous, including Daniel Cormier. He beat Frank Mir via decision. It sucked. No one's defending it, including Cormier. But he won. I don't know what you do with him now. Certainly, I'm not excited to see him fight anybody at this point. But he admitted that he messed up in camp. He said that I didn't want to go to the ground with the guy. I trained to not go to the ground with him, and that was a mistake. I need to learn jiu-jitsu. I need to be able to get down on the ground with guys and not be afraid. And apparently that's going to be his goal. Obviously, strong wrestler, but he was afraid of being Brock Lesnar. And as he noted, now is the time to start working on getting over that fear. And presumably that's what he's going to be doing in camp. But Frank Mir lasted all three rounds. He looked so tired in the first round, but somehow had a comeback of sorts in the third. Some would argue he won the third round. Doesn't matter. He lost the fight. But nothing exciting there. Certainly when it was over, I don't think anybody was clamoring for Cormier to drop to 205 to face Jon Jones. But maybe they were. I don't know. I wasn't.
I kind of am, just because I, you know, it bothers, I think, all of us for guys after fights in their interviews and in the press conference, when they're asked, who do you want to fight or who looks good for you in the division or do you want a title shot, when they act all overly humble or they don't want to answer the question or whatever it is, I think we all get upset because it's not smart business and it's just really annoying. But watching the post-fight press conference last night, when Cormier said that he wasn't worthy of a title shot yet against Mir or after the Mir fight, and said, you know, when he was asked if there was anybody in the heavyweight division that he wanted to face, he didn't bring up anybody. And usually I get upset with that, but last night I really couldn't after that fight. And, you know, it's been brought up that he would drop to 205 to face Jon Jones. And I got to be honest, after last night, I'd be okay with it because obviously, you know, Jones should defeat Chael Sonnen. That's just, he should. You know, imagine the possibilities, I think, if Sonnen does win and how just incorrigible he'll be if that actually happens. But frankly, you know, yes, Cormier said he's got to work on his jiu-jitsu and everything, and he most certainly does. But a guy of his physical strength with the level of wrestling that he's at, I think brings again, with Jones's reach against him and his just physical prowess, I think it's going to really, to me, it's very intriguing and very interesting. And after last night, seeing Cormier and Frank Mir, again, there's a lot of guys at the heavyweight division I'd like to see Cormier face, and I'd be fine with that. But I think the most interesting thing he can do, and with his style right now, and with the way Jon Jones has been going and not being able to have opponents for him, I think that would actually be a perfect matchup.
We're going to head to a break. We got a lot more when we come back. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here every Sunday on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this show, your destination after this show is over should be WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates and more radio shows than you have any idea what to do with. Every single radio show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is up on the site right now. And by every radio show, I'm not talking about we do one show a week. I'm talking we do 10 to 15 shows every single week. If you add all those together, thousands and thousands, over, I believe, 3,500 radio shows at this point. A ridiculous number of radio shows are available in our archives, and we add new shows every single day. Dave Meltzer and I were up last night talking the Strikeforce event and all of the news from the weekend. We're up tomorrow night after Raw. I got tons and tons of shows coming up. We have so many big names that have appeared on the show in the past couple of weeks and are appearing in the next couple of weeks. Mick Foley has been on the show. The Diva Maria was on the show last week. Les Thatcher is on Tuesday. Diamond Dallas Page is scheduled for the show. Jake the Snake Roberts is scheduled for the show. We got so many awesome shows coming up. You can listen to them all as a subscriber. It's only $10.99 per month. If you sign up, $10.99 a month, you get full access to everything. You'll not only be able to download brand new shows or get them sent to your listening device via podcast every single day, but you can go to the archives and listen to so many shows. Bruno Sammartino's been on the show. Ric Flair's been on the show. Kurt Angle's been on the show. List goes on and on. So many awesome shows in the archives. Head up there and check those out. And if you got a commute, if you work out, if you just love listening to wrestling and mixed martial arts audio, there is no better place to go in the world than WrestlingObserver.com. So try it out. It's $10.99. You can try it for a month. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But as I've noted, if you like this show, I guarantee you that you will love WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out, WrestlingObserver.com. And now, here we are, back to the show. Wanted to make mention about last night's show, the Daniel Cormier fight, in regards to him going to, he says he needs to learn jiu-jitsu. Here's the thing with jiu-jitsu, as someone who's done it for a very, very long time. If Cormier works on his submission defense, it takes a significantly longer period of time to learn how to be good offensively at jiu-jitsu than it does to just learn how to be successful defending jiu-jitsu. Obviously, even if you're great at submission defense, if you come across the right guy, he can still get you. I'm not saying that over, you know, if you train really hard at submission defense for a couple of years, no one will be able to defeat you. That's not the case. But to get to the level where you're going in there and destroying everybody with your jiu-jitsu, that's a decade-long journey, 15 years. You know, to be a guy like Damian Maya, who just goes in there, and if it goes to the ground, you're dead meat. I mean, this is not what Daniel Cormier needs to do. Daniel Cormier is a great wrestler. He can already take down guys. He can control them. He can destroy them with his ground and pound. What he needs to just work on is his submission defense. And this is not a 12-year journey. You know, Ken Shamrock, when he went in and very, very early on when he had the fight, the famous fight with Hoist Gracie, and he'd done submission wrestling in Japan, submission fighting for quite a while. And he went in with Hoist Gracie and he ended up getting choked out. And his issue was, no one had ever choked me out. So after that, the choke loss to Hoist Gracie, he ended up going and putting on a gi and training his submission defense. And I do not believe he was ever submitted again. So anyway, it's not an impossible journey for Cormier to go in there and learn how to defend submissions against 98% of the guys he's ever going to face in mixed martial arts. And once you can defend those submissions and you can use your ground game as an Olympic caliber wrestler and destroy people. So it's not a case of him going in there and having to learn jiu-jitsu from scratch and spend 15 years becoming one of the best in the world on the ground. He doesn't need that. He just needs to learn how to defend himself on the ground against most people and most of the most common submissions. And this is something that can be done, I don't want to say relatively quickly, but he can figure this out, and it shouldn't take a lifetime.
Well, and he's going to need it, too. I mean, he is 35 years old. It's not like he's going to be doing I wouldn't think. I mean, look, there's going to be the next Randy Couture. It's going to happen at some point. Well, there will be somebody who's 46 years old. There'll be a next Bernard Hopkins in boxing, you know, maybe not till 50. But there'll always be somebody like that. So, with what you said, with just learning the defense of it, with his hands too, I mean, and the amount of power that he has, and granted, yes, his reach is not, you know, super long or anything like that for the heavyweight division being a shorter guy, but he's proven he's got dynamite in his hands right now. You know, he's already a incredibly impressive package as it is. So yeah, adding that to the game would be, you know, huge for him. Although I don't know if it would help him much against Cain Velasquez, although that fight probably will. I guess I'm not saying it'll never happen, but they, you know, I heard you and Dave Meltzer last night talking about the fact that they probably don't want to face each other. Cormier said he'd be fine doing it, but Dave has indicated that neither one of them really want to. So to me, that's another reason where, again, him at 205 pounds would be perfect for him. And also, you know, in learning jiu-jitsu defense, you know, if they have one of those two fights next, again, he can continue to work on it without there being much threat of having to deal with jiu-jitsu, because obviously, you know, that's not something that John Jones or Velasquez, neither one of them rely on.
And with an Olympic caliber wrestler, it's unlikely he's going to end up on the bottom of the mount very often or stuck in side control. You know, he's going to end up in a guy's guard and maybe a guy will get his back. So you learn to defend the most common submissions from the guard. You learn to protect your neck and your arm from the back. And I don't want to say you're good to go, but certainly you don't have to worry about going to the ground with 95% of the guys. And if there is a guy, if you've got a Hodger Gracie that you're going to be facing, and no matter how much submission defense you've trained, there's still a good chance this guy's going to get you. Just don't let the guy take you down. You're Daniel Cormier. Just have the stand-up fight you had with Frank Mir. It may suck, but at least you won't be doing that for all of your fights. You'll only be doing that for the fights against the guys that genuinely, no matter how much defense you've trained, could still get you on the ground. And there aren't a lot of guys like that. There aren't a lot of Hodger Gracies in the world. So anyway, that's my theory regarding Daniel Cormier's future. The undercard of the fight, the show last night, I don't think you saw a lot of it, but it was a good undercard. There were a lot of good knockouts. Matt Brown knocked out Jordan Mean in an upset. I think in some places, Jordan Mean was a -350 favorite. Matt Brown knocked him out. Chad Mendez destroyed Darren Elkins via knockout very quickly. Lorenz Larkin and Francis Carmont absolutely sucked, so we'll skip that one. And then we had Miles Jury and Ramzy Nijem, which... Miles Jury won. I was infuriated at Miles Jury. At one point during this fight, Ramzy got poked in the eye on accident, and he turned his back to Miles, and he covered his eye, and he started walking away. And granted, to be fair, you're not supposed to stop fighting until the referee stops it. So by the letter of the law, Miles Jury didn't do anything wrong. But when Ramzy turned his back and covered his eye, his back was to Miles Jury, and he was covering his eye. Miles Jury still decided to throw a high kick at his head. I was infuriated. And then later, he knocked the dude out, and, I mean, this punch, like, lights out. I mean, he landed this punch. Dude fell like he'd been killed. I mean, like a dead body. And it's not something that, in hindsight, you're like, oh, wow. I mean, this, the moment it happened, it was like, all right, that guy's dead. And what did Miles Jury do? Again, by the letter of the law, he didn't do anything wrong. But it was so clear this guy was out, yet he still had to dive in and land one more shot to this dude's body. Infuriated. And then he went in and had this big promo about how he had his own style of jiu-jitsu that he was going to teach the world. This is classic pro wrestling heat. I am waiting for someone to destroy Miles Jury after this performance last night.
Yeah, I mean, yes, as you said, to the letter of the law, he did nothing wrong. But if you haven't seen the knockout, when you see it, he was out. I mean, he was out. He fell to the ground with his arms in the air. you know, backwards, and his eyes are rolled up into the back of the head. He is very clearly not getting up, or at the very least...
There is no maybe he'll recover.
Yes, that you can cock the punch, you can act like you're going to throw it just in case he moves, but he wasn't moving. And John McCarthy was jumping in there, and I mean, again, it's a fight in a way there's nothing you can do, because these guys, it's hard to believe unless you see them in person or unless you've done it, how fast it actually is. So sometimes, I mean, again, there are split-second things, but there was just absolutely no need for that whatsoever. I mean, I was at UFC 111 where I think it was Rusamar Pilares choked a guy out. And I think it was, because that was the one where he ended up, he got suspended afterwards because he failed to release his choke. And it was heel hook, and it's like there were, again, no reason to do that except to hurt the guy. I mean, there was no reason to do that. And to me, this wasn't as egregious as that, because technically it kind of falls under the rules, and it's just one of those things where it's a judgment thing. But it was the wrong judgment, and I think it's, I don't know. And again, it's a fight, it's a split-second thing, but to me, that one was really, really hard to defend, especially coming after the head kick when he was turned around. And again, yes, technically he didn't do anything wrong, but I, you know, to me that was just kind of bad, really, really bad form.
I'm not sure what fight it was. There was another fight here on the show where the horn sounded... And these two dudes were in the middle of a violent ground and pound, and it went at least a second past the bell because they just completely ignored the bell. And the referee's in there trying to pull them apart, and that was, I mean,
was it Henderson Melendez? Didn't that happen? It happened on the Fox card.
Yeah, it was either that one or the Jordan Mean fight with Matt Brown. Because certainly it wasn't it wasn't Cormier and Mir, because nothing happened in that fight. And maybe it was Diaz Thompson. I can't remember, but. It was like, that should have at least been like a verbal, listen, you idiots, that horn sounds and I jump in there, you stop. There's not an extra 1 second of violence where I try and pull you guys apart. But what the hell? Like I said,
say for TV purposes, it was actually kind of good. When you get those once in a while, you know, you get the passion out. That was actually a good one.
On paper, the dude did nothing wrong, but I don't know. I mean, I've seen fights. Don't get me wrong. I've seen fights where a guy lands a great shot. And he turns around and starts walking away, and it's like, dude, that guy may not be done. You know, you knocked him down, but he looked like he may be able to recover from this thing. This is not what happened last night. Nijem was just like, he was out. I mean, just out. And it was patently clear the moment it happened. It wasn't like, let me watch the replay, and in slow motion, oh, he's clearly out. What a jerk. No, this was like the moment it happened. It was like, this dude's done for, and the guy still had to dive it. Anyway, I'm going to move on because I'm going to get infuriated here. But, yeah, that was it. A lot of other good knockouts and fights on the show. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, I'm sure it'll be replaying on, I think it replays on Fuel. I know the prelims last night. The FX prelims were on Fuel a couple of hours later, actually, which is great because I left the house Saturday, forgot to set the DVR, like a numbskull. But luckily, I was back in time to get the Fox show and get the replay of the prelims, and I am thankful that I did because those were some great fights. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we've got a lot of pro wrestling news to talk about, plus a preview of Sonnen versus Jones. A lot of stuff coming up in the next hour. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We got a very short segment here. So let's do a preview of hour two. Mike, is there any chance that Chael Sonnen beats John Jones next weekend?
Yeah, well, you know what? I was thinking when it came to this Frank Mir Daniel Cormier contest, you know, it could go like Brock Lesnar. I mean... You know, with Mir, you can never count Mir out, for even at this point in his career, because of the jiu-jitsu and the skill that he has. And I was thinking how amazing it would be if Mir was able to do that against Cormier, to set up a rematch between the two, which I think would go exactly like Lesnar and Mir 2 went. But then also, can you imagine what would happen if Chael, it's almost like, I don't want to say Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, but a lot of people are looking at Chael as all mouth. He's too small. Look at the physical skills. He's this, he's that, he's the other. But just imagine if he did beat John Jones, who's been surly, and I'm not saying he's been Sonny Liston-esque or anything like that, but he has not been doing his part in the from the promotional end, I guess you could say, as far as really wanting to hype the fight or anything like that, which frankly brings into the thing for me over, I don't expect all fighters to be able to be good at that, but I do expect some representation from them to kind of be able to do that and to kind of hype things up. So, hey, it's possible. Anything is possible. It's a fight. Realistically, though, it's not going to happen. Jones is just too physically good. And Sonnen, again, for as good as his wrestling is in the whole nine yards and everything like that, he does a better job promoting himself into a position than maybe he really is. And I don't want to insult him at all, because the fights with Anderson Silva, the first fight was just magnificent. And you know he's got, you know, great, great skill and everything. But against Jones, it's just way too tough to see. It's just, you know, the really good big man in this case is going to beat the, you know, more than above average smaller man.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, I'm going to give you the odds. The odds for this show, they're interesting. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also check out Sirius Channel 794. Sometimes we end up on Sirius Channel 92. You can always find us on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone by searching Wrestling Observer. We're there every week, plus archives as well. So TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone is a great place to go. And obviously, as noted, all Sports Byline USA over-the-air radio affiliates. For the break, we're talking about Chael Sonnen versus John Jones. I promised I would give you the odds. I lied! I'm joking. The odds are about minus 850. Minus 850 for John Jones, plus between 500 and 600 for Chael Sonnen. Basically, that means that in order to win $100, you got to bet about 900 on John Jones. And for Chael Sonnen, if you bet 100, you can win 500 if he wins. What do you think about odds that long?
Usually, in a lot of cases like that, I always say if you have an extra 50 or 100, say you were having a good run and you have it to spare, hey, it's worth doing it. I mean, you know, it's that Buster Douglas thing. And again, it's a fight. You never know what could happen. So when you get, like, extreme odds sometimes with guys who especially who have proven their worth and they're talented and you know that they have ability, you might as well do it. If, to be honest, in this one, I would still lean away against it. But again, if you have an extra 50 or 100 bucks, put it on Chael, because that turns into 500 in case he does win. But, you know, if it's, you know, if you don't have that, or if you're just looking at it from the would you do this point of view? No, it's a fight you stay away from. I mean, it's a lot of people like betting on favorites. I for the most part, hate doing it, especially when you get into the Floyd Mayweather Jr., John Jones type of realm. It's just there's way too much risk for very little reward coming out of it.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about UFC 159 and then pro wrestling news and your Twitter questions. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio. Try Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208. You can also stream us live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com every Sunday. Also, check out the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone. That is the TuneIn Radio app. You can check out Sports Byline programming, a lot of great programming, plus this show and archives. That is the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. We're talking UFC Jones versus Sonnen. Quick look at the card. Jones versus Sonnen for the light heavyweight title. Michael Bisping versus Alan Belcher. Roy Nelson versus Chick Congo. Phil Davis versus Vinny Moglhaes. And Jim Miller versus Pat Healy. And Mike, what do you think about this card? One fight card, or are you looking forward to it?
No, I'm kind of looking forward to it, actually. You know, on the preliminary show on FX is going to be Sarah McMahon against Sheila Gaff. So, I mean, that's, you know, that'll be interesting. You know, obviously being in the New York market, there's going to be a lot of eyes on the card and everything. And even though this wasn't as big as the Zingano-Tate fight and obviously not Ronda Rousey, it's still very interesting to see what the reaction is going to be and everything. Jim Miller being a guy from New Jersey is always fun to watch. He's another one in that lightweight picture in a lot of ways. Not near a title shot, but as things shake out and fights happen, you know, he can definitely work his way back into one. And I think he's going to beat Pat Healy. Light heavyweight Phil Davis, who, again, I like a lot, who's kind of, his progress has kind of slowed up a lot. It's going to be, you know, interesting to see him and Magalhaes. But again, you know, not a whole lot of pressure on Davis, I guess you can say. But if he's going to continue to stay relevant and go back to what he looked like, and, you know, very, you know, fresh and exciting as he did against, like, Gustafsson on that little bit of a run where, you know, he was coming up with, you know, the good submissions and very confident in his abilities. You know, he needs to go back to that because he really smacked the wall against Rashad Evans. And, you know, to me, has been exactly the same guy since. Roy Nelson and Chuck Congo, obviously, I like Roy Nelson. He brings me great entertainment. So anytime he gets the fight, it's always going to be fun. And the fight against Congo is pretty much, I would assume, set up for someone to knock the other guy out. I don't see this being Roy Nelson using his jiu-jitsu skill to dominate Congo. Some dude's getting knocked out in that one. Bisping and Belcher is going to be a good fight, too. And it's not the flashiest semi-main event you can have. But, again, this is a fight from the outside where it's not the most exciting thing in the world. And I bet you there's going to be a lot of people that skip it, even though it is John Jones, who is a, you know, your dominant light heavyweight champion and everything. But I think there's going to be a lot of people who look at this as a mismatch and don't order it. But because of the undercard, it could be a situation where maybe the main fight's not that great, but with what they have lined up, it could actually be a sleeper of a show. Not as good as this past one. It's just too much to live up to. But it could be, a little bit of a surprise of a show.
All right. We're going to switch over to pro wrestling at this point. We'll talk more about this UFC show next week on this program. But we got a lot of pro wrestling news to get into, not the least of which is surgery for The Rock. He suffered an injury at WrestleMania, taking the AA early on in the match, and got worse as the match went on. Tore his abs away from his pelvis, an adductor injury, I believe a hernia as well. And he's got movies. He's got a lot of work he's got to do. And so his idea was, I am going to work through it. Bad idea. He has already had to start canceling appearances, and he finally tweeted today that, in fact, I think he claimed that his intestines were coming through his abdominal wall, which is actually what a hernia is, and that's no good. Doctors had to push it back in. So basically, it is time for The Rock, in fact, to undergo surgery. So he's going to get it surgically repaired. I don't know what that means for Hercules. I don't know what that means for any of his future. Actually, if this prevents Hercules from being filmed, I predict Rock never wrestles again because he will no longer be able to afford it. Not saying that this is going to mean that Rock will be broke, but you can't wrestle and risk injuries that are going to prevent you from filming projects to the scope of Hercules. So I guess we'll see. If Hercules starts in May. Depends on the recovery time for the surgery. It is, of course, late April. So, yeah, this is no good for The Rock.
No, that's an industry where there's a lot of different livelihoods at stake, and people have movies and events and their plans lined up for a long time, and there's a lot of things that go into it where it's not like you're moving a fight show. I mean, to move a the production of a movie. Apparently, to what the scope of Hercules is, because I know probably it sounds ridiculous on the surface that we're talking about, you know, a movie named Hercules with great acclaim, but apparently this was going to be a really big deal and a big budget and the whole nine yards. And I'm sure there's already, you know, many, many people within Hollywood and within that end of The Rock's life where they probably are not huge fans of him going back into wrestling as it is and don't understand his passion for it. But it would probably be the last time he wrestles, because this, if that's the case and there's got to be some sort of major shakeup with this movie, that's going to be really, really bad. And it's too bad for The Rock too, because he came back and gave wrestling fans, some great excitement, with coming back, and he didn't have to, and his passion for wrestling, I think, should be greatly appreciated. But, you know, looking at it from the purely business point of view for him, with the injuries that he got, tough break, really, really a tough break.
Rock's going to continue doing movies. I mean, the thing you've got to think about is Rock suffered serious injuries in a match with John Cena. And then the idea would be that next year he's going to have a match with Brock Lesnar. I'm not saying that Brock Lesnar goes out and hurts people, but obviously if you're going to wrestle Brock Lesnar, it's going to be a much more physical style of match. Rock's going to be another year older. I mean, you're almost guaranteed something is going to go wrong in that match. Maybe not a serious injury, but something's going to hurt afterwards.
But that's like the thing with Brock Taker, too. That's why the reason we probably wouldn't see that.
Yeah. Undertaker has more Rock tore muscles, and Undertaker's just got like a lot of physical. He's just banged up and everything hurts, but it's not like he's got like serious injuries. He's just hurting, and he came out of the match this year fine. You know, he actually probably came out of it better than most of the guys on the card, amazingly. But Brock, it's just like, especially when you tear muscles taking an AA. You know what I mean? It's a fireman's carry into a back bump. It's not a difficult move to take. It's not a high impact kind of move. He still got injured. So we're talking like taking a beating from Brock Lesnar in that match. I don't think that match is going to happen.
And that would actually be really too bad. That actually would be too bad if that doesn't happen, because again, you know, hopefully WWE goes into that show with a lot more foresight and planning than they did for this one as far as the undercard goes. But, you know, the Rock in New Orleans, or the Rock anywhere, to have a match to the level of Rock and Brock Lesnar when you have such a good storyline already built in, because their first match was based, you know, they hyped that up as a sporting event. They showed them warming up and working out and all of this stuff before their, I think it was it Hell in the Cell or whatever it was, where they had their, when they had their one match and Brock Lesnar went over and won the title, it would be really, really too bad, because that is just, you know, from a pure spectacle point of view, a awesomely entertaining affair between the two of those guys.
The show Extreme Rules is coming up, and Brock Lesnar is wrestling on that show against Triple H in a steel cage match. That is going to be the follow-up, and I don't even know at this point what's going on. I mean, if they're still planning on Rock and Brock Lesnar, then you would presume that Brock wins. I mean, it only makes sense if they're going to do something with Brock at next year's WrestleMania that he beats Triple H here in this rubber match. But I don't know what they're going to do. It's interesting that they're using up Brock Lesnar dates on another match in this feud. Maybe the idea was, man, shouldn't have beat Brock at Mania, but we booked ourselves into a corner, so now the best we can do is book a third match and let him win that one. I mean, I presume that's where they're going to go, but I don't know. So we're going to talk about that as well after the break, plus CM Punk, knee injury, what is the status? All of that coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. After our next break, we're going to have a long segment taking your Twitter questions. You can always follow me on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Sempervivi. That's at Brian Alvarez and at Semper Vivi. So check those Twitter handles out. We were talking before the break about the Lesnar Triple H cage match. Mike, what do you think you're going to do for a finish here?
I don't know. I think Brock Lesnar, he has to win. He has to win. And I don't know if it was for legacy stake or what it is exactly with why Triple H had to go over Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, or maybe this was the plan the whole time. This has been built in the whole deal where Lesnar would actually, they'd have a third match, but it certainly didn't seem like that from any indications. So it's got to me to be a relatively dominant win, and I don't know how it happens. Maybe a stoppage or something like that. I would actually like to see that more than anything. Beat Triple H into the ground, beat him to a pulp. Say again that, he may have won a couple of matches against me, but obviously physically he can't stand it. Physically he's done. And then Triple H goes away. And then in the situation where you don't get Rock and Brock Lesnar again next year for whatever reason, then maybe you have, if that's the way you write Lesnar out, you have the ability to do Lesnar and Triple H again at next year's WrestleMania. I'm not saying it's the best idea. I'm not saying anybody should clamor for it. But what I am saying is at least it gets Triple H out of there for a while. You have an excuse for him to be gone. You have Lesnar looking dominant, and you have him because he's going to be there, and you're paying him all that much money anyway. That's, I think, a good way to have him go dominant through the rest of the year and have him go through whatever it has to take to get him to WrestleMania.
The John Cena-Ryback match. Ryback has lost 8 million matches, including to Mark Henry, which sets him up for a championship match in WWE land. I guess the idea is, well, he was going to turn heel, so it didn't matter if he lost to Mark Henry. You can lose to Mark Henry, and then you turn heel and you get a clean slate. But it does appear that that is leading to him now losing to John Cena. This man cannot catch a break unless, Mike, you think there's a possibility that Ryback is going to beat John Cena and win the title.
God, I hope not. Unless Paul Heyman's going to be his manager, or unless something like that occurs, I don't know. That would seem so phony, nobody would buy it anyway, even though Paul Heyman would be able to say it. Say CM Punk's gone for a while, and now he's got the two most dominant forces or something like that, because at least Heyman could get more out of him, I think, from an entertainment point of view, that Ryback can certainly do for himself, judging either from his promo or his in-ring ability, outside of shaking his shoulder and saying, feed me more. To me, there's not a whole lot of reason to see Ryback, especially not when he's been beat 887 times. But again, even if they did that, I don't want to see Ryback as WWE champion. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Him losing to John Cena again, I don't know what you would then do. I don't know if it's going to be a thing where they have some sort of no contest and they do it again at the next pay-per-view just to drag it out a little bit more, but that's the problem you have. And I mean, this should have been figured out a long time ago with the situation they ran into with CM Punk and Ryback, and they couldn't figure out, I guess they did the best they could to get out of that situation, but they should stop with booking themselves into corners. Cause again, if Ryback loses this, then really what good is he outside of being somebody's meathead and somebody's enforcer or something like that? And, if he goes ahead and wins the title, again, is that the best thing you can do? I mean, is that really what everything's been needed? I know they want a lot of new blood in there and everything, but maybe they have a great idea for this, but until I see one or until I see how it plays out, I'm not feeling that great about it.
Yeah, it just seems like now's not the time to beat Ryback. Dude just turned. But they spent up an entire year building John Cena towards winning the title, so it doesn't seem like John Cena can win. It's probably going to be lose. Seems the main event of the show is going to be this match, so you can't really do a screw job finish, not to mention it's extreme rules. So I'm sure they're going to have some sort of stipulation which will eliminate some sort of screw job finish. Maybe it can be a tables match, so Ryback doesn't have to be pinned. I don't know. This whole thing seems like they're going to get to that Sunday and then realize, oh my God, we don't want to beat either guy. What do we do now? I mean, I presume they must have thought about it by now before they put the thing together, but I don't know. Seems short-sighted to me. But
and a lack of creativity. I mean, you think about what they used to do after WrestleMania, where we're obviously going to have some house cleaning, but they would do the draft after WrestleMania, or they would do other things because they go into a holding pattern. And frankly, they should really go back to that. I mean, Ryback should have turned on somebody else, you know, even though it wouldn't have had the impact that it had with him doing it on Cena, on another face to build him up and to build him up for Cena. And you could have Cena against an Antonio Cesaro or somebody like that to pass the time for a month until you see what you can get out of Ryback and until you see what kind of plan you're going to have. And that's the most disappointing with not only that, but the world title, where you have Dolph Ziggler finally winning the belt. Like, anyone should believe this. It's just that the fact that they like him is the fact that nobody regurgitated on the fact that a guy who lost 975 times has got the hottest girl and has got, you know, his heavy behind him, you know, goes and wins the world title and then loses to Jack Swagger again for what reason, except for just you didn't have any other creative way to get into a three-way between the guys, which, again, I'm looking forward to in a lot of ways because they are, I do like all three guys and everything, but was that the best you can do? And I think that's, again, the most disappointing part of coming out of WrestleMania here is they didn't have a whole lot of creativity and they relied on star power going into it. And now here we go coming out of it where, again, maybe they have a grand idea and we have to see how it plays out, but can you really have that much confidence in them?
Historically?
Exactly.
The CM Punk, since he was mentioned, his knee is screwed up. He was told to take about 6 weeks off. He's been removed from house shows. He's not wrestling on television. The question will be when they call him back, how much time they'll actually give him off. I don't know how badly his knee is injured. Apparently, like an ACL strain. I don't know if it's actually torn or anything like that. His leg hurts. We shall see. He was at UFC last night. He's going to be at UFC this coming Saturday. He was at UFC last weekend as well, where apparently, Mike, as I'm sure you heard on last night's Observer Radio, Mark Coleman apparently tried to find and beat up CM Punk. Why? Because UFC put CM Punk on the big screen as a celebrity and not Mark Coleman. Why Mark Coleman blamed CM Punk for this, I have absolutely no idea. I've not gotten a good explanation. I doubt I will. But an amazing story. An amazing story. Especially given that Mark Coleman is actually a pro wrestler in addition to a fighter. I don't know what's going on with the world, Mike.
Mark Coleman is insane, but he is also a worker. I will say this. I think what you should do at some point this evening after we're done with this program is you go search the internets and find the picture of Mark Coleman in Japan doing a Japanese commercial for Dole Bananas, where he is sitting, riding a banana like a horse, both hands on it, wearing a little crown's helmet. I don't know what that has to do with selling bananas, but Mark Coleman did that, and I believe that is a good picture to have up on the site and to really kind of equate the ridiculousness of Mark Coleman blaming CM Punk with how ridiculous he looked in that picture.
I've seen a lot of commercials from Japan, and I never know what they're trying to sell. Or I know what they're trying to sell, but I understand how the commercial is supposed to sell it. That is, yeah, seems to be like a common issue.
Bob Sapp in Japan had some of the most ridiculous, hilarious stuff you have ever seen in your entire life. Don Fry, I believe, had some good ones as well.
Frogs selling toothbrushes.
Sure, why not?
I don't even know frogs have teeth.
Well, frogs in Japan do.
I hadn't thought of that. All right, we got a lot of Twitter questions here. I want to make sure we jump into some of those. My Twitter handle, at Brian Alvarez, and Semper Vivi is, believe it or not, at Semper Vivi.
It means always alive in Latin.
That's right. That's right, always alive. All right, let's get into some of these questions here. Actually, this person wants to know our thoughts on the possible beef and potential fight between Mark Coleman and CM Punk. So, just to clarify, you believe that Coleman's just a worker?
I think, in a way. I think, you know, he may have been peeved. He really actually may have been peeved in the fact that they didn't show him. In the he gave his body and his life for mixed martial arts. If you could ever see the show of him, it was Pride, and I think it was Pride in the States, where he got beat up in front of his daughters. And it was the post-fight promo afterwards was incredibly entertaining, in a way very unsettling at the same time. But again, I think Mark Coleman calling out CM Punk and being angry at him for it, I think there may possibly be some theatrics there. Not for because Mark Coleman is going to clamor for a WWE contract, just basically because he can do it.
This person here says, any developmental standouts expected on the main roster anytime soon? Have you been watching any developmental, and who looks good? Besides Summer Rae.
I was going to say Summer Rae. Rob Naylor's sweater collection is actually looking pretty good, too. But I don't get a chance to see it that much or anything, and haven't seen it recently. So, you know, I've actually been asking around people, too, on, like, Cassius Ohno and people like that. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the best thing they have down there is the Queen. And she's doing training, and that's it. And that's kind of disappointing, the fact that why is Sarah Del Rey actually not on the WWE roster with the state of their women's division? I'm not saying she's got to stay there forever or anything, but in a way it's too bad she's not up there, because she's, again, the women's matches and the situation with the women right now is so hideously awful. Just having her there for a little bit would be a grand improvement.
All right, we're headed to the break. When we come back, more Twitter questions on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM 208. Pick and choose. You can also check us out on the internet worldwide, streaming, WrestlingObserver.com, as well as the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. TuneIn Radio is the name of the app. You can search Sports Byline, listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, plus archives of this show. We also have archives available up at WrestlingObserver.com for subscribers, and our archives are immense. Thousands, I believe over 3,500 radio shows are available in the archives right now. Maybe more. I actually should go back and look. Every show we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives. That is 8 years. 8 years worth of programming. We do anywhere from 10 to 15 radio shows every single week. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. If you sign up for $10.99 per month, you can only sign up one time if you'd like. Just give it one shot at $10.99 if you don't like it, and never sign up again. But if you sign up to the website, you not only get the archives, but every single brand new show that we do. We did a new show last night talking the Strikeforce show and all of the news and wrestling. Got a new one tomorrow night, Dave Meltzer and I after Raw. Got a lot of big interviews coming up, including Diamond Dallas Page and Jake the Snake Roberts, who, of course, are living together, and Dallas Page is attempting to clean up Jake's life and apparently doing an excellent job of it. Jake was at Cauliflower Alley last week and looked awesome. Both did great speeches in accepting Jake the Snake Roberts' award that he was given by Cauliflower Alley, the Cauliflower Alley Club banquet every year. And all of those shows and everything is available on the website. So my recommendation is, if you like this show, go to WrestlingObserver.com right now. Sign up. It's very easy. Credit card, PayPal, however you want to do it. Sign up for a month. Give it a shot. It's only $10.99 for 1 month. If you don't like it, never sign up again. But if you like this show, I promise you, I guarantee you that you will be a subscriber for life, because it'll take a lifetime to go through all the archives of all of the shows that we have available. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. You will not be disappointed. And in the meantime, let's continue on with this free show that we do every week. This person
hey, Brian,
here.
Actually, before we go any further, let me actually bring up this about developmental. If they're serious about the idea of the quote unquote Olympic style training center that Triple H is I guess in the lead of going to set things up. For a lot you can say about Triple H, I guess he has been a proponent of more of a sports style interviews after title wins and of tap outs and things like that. He apparently has been a proponent of those things from what I've heard, and obviously he's going to lead this charge, I guess, when it comes to the training facility. If they are serious about it and they plan to do a lot of great things with it, even though it's going to be somewhat of a finishing school and people are not, you know, hardcore fans like, say, the ones that like El Generico or Chris Hero or Claudio, when they went in there, they're not going to want to see him go be refined in the WWE system and being sent there as if it's the minor leagues. But with that said, it is the WWE's business. They are going to do what they are going to do. And if this becomes something that just helps guys learn how to work on the mic, it gives them a chance to work with, not Bill DeMott, obviously. You know, anybody can have their feelings upon him, but I'm not even saying him as much as Dusty Rhodes and William Regal and Ricky Steamboat, who I guess is not going to be doing much of it. He's moving more into a PR position. But any of the guys like that that they can get help from, if it's really going to be invested in and be that good of a school, even for people that don't make it in WWE and they release, if they get better mic time and all that sort of stuff, it is really going to help the rest of the independent scene, because not everybody's going to thrive in that system. And if somebody goes out of it with a little bit of knowledge to help themselves along the way, it is going to filter down. Now, if it's just a situation, if this turns into a worst-case situation like a Deep South, then obviously it helps no one, and it was a huge waste of money. But I really do think this is a interesting, cool idea with you know, and if they're really, really serious about it, it's going to help everybody.
They did announce this weekend that their new performance training center is opening up, I believe, in June, and 7 rings. It is similar to an NFL-style training facility. I don't even know if there's like a main one. I don't know anything about the NFL. But they're trying to make it like an NFL training center, an Olympic training center. And, they're going to have special areas for promos and that sort of thing. And the idea is, if you want to be a wrestler, if you want to make it to WWE, then your goal is not WWE necessarily, but your goal is to make it to this this training center. And from there, they will groom you into what they want for WWE. You can't just go and, like, show up and start training. Obviously, they've got to recruit you. They don't have walk-ons, as far as I know. But that is the new training center, and from what I've seen, it's looking pretty good. So we'll see how that pans out for them. But they just had a press conference. It's up on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com right now if you want to go up there and check that out. And there's also an interview Brian Fritz did with Triple H, where he talked about their ideas behind it and what the philosophy was, everything like that. It's a very good interview, so make sure you go up there and check that out. All right, back to the Twitter questions here. This one, I'm sure you could go on for hours, Mike. Steven Quadros suggested that Fight Metric should take over judges' scoring. Good idea or bad idea?
Bad idea in that it's
thing with Fight Metric is you're still dealing with humans, though. You know what I mean? Like, they still have to determine what is a significant shot and what is not.
Yeah, it's like CompuBox. That's how they started. And you know, when you look at the Olympics and boxing, where guys don't see shots and they're supposed to be, you have to do it within a certain period of time. And obviously the Fight Metric guys are fantastic. And I believe maybe possibly that you should give judges the ability to check a stat or something like that, or to see a replay or to do those sorts of things, you know. And it's hard to do within a minute, but I mean, to arm people with more knowledge, I don't think that's a bad idea. But when you leave it in the hands of a computer or something like that, I mean, I know you're not a sports fan, but college football has this issue with computers deciding national championships, and you take the human aspect out of it, and numbers can be deceiving sometimes. And you cannot measure how hard a punch was or how much damage it did. What a liver kick that doesn't knock you out. I mean, yes, it's say you dominated a guy the whole round, and then, you know, if I'm beating you and then you kick me in the liver and it doesn't put me out completely, but you know you've devastated me. And then you win the rest of the round with, you know, you don't do it great, but you dominate the rest of the round by just landing the right punch at the right time, not an overabundance of them. How does that stand out on that type of scoring? So, again, I understand with the amount of bad judges that are out there, it comes down to the end of the day, we just need better judges. we really do, or maybe we need five judges, and we'll see how that works, or just anything. But to take it out and put it into a computer's hands, it doesn't do it justice. I mean, fighters fight off emotion. It's an emotional sport. It is not a bottom line number sport. I mean, you know, look how much do losses really mean in MMA if you're really a fun fighter? They don't mean anything at all. Clay Guida's going to have a job for life. How can that be measured? I understand why the idea is there, and I can understand using the technology to help judges more, but to me, it just doesn't, it would never actually work.
Yeah, it's, the answer is, honest to God, in determining who wins a fight, the answer lays less in the hands of the judges and more in the hands of the fighters. I mean, that sounds kind of stupid, but like the problem is like when you're at the UFC level, the guys are so good that you're going to have a lot of fights that are a lot closer. And sometimes like last night with Gilbert Melendez and Benson Henderson, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're using humans, doesn't matter if you're using a computer, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's all, I don't want to say it's going to come down to a coin flip because that's not fair. But it's just like fight was too close. The fight was too close to have a decisive winner. That's what it is. And I mean, the only way to have decisive winners, I mean, unless you have like just a completely incompetent judge where a fight is just like, it's so one-sided that, I mean, there's no debate, but yet somehow one judge gives it to the other guy. As I talked about, if it was on this show or another show, but I believe there was a fight in Bellator where it was very, very clear that the judge did not know which guy was which. And he thought he was watching one guy the entire time and gave him the fight, when in reality, that was the other guy, if that makes any sense. Like, it was Bob and Joe, and he was confused about who Bob and Joe was. So he gave the fight to Bob, even though he meant to give it to Joe, but he screwed up because he didn't know their names. You know, when you got a situation like that, that's like, okay, well, this is like a completely different matter entirely. But honest to God, it's very, very rare that you see something like that happen. What happens 90% of the time, and we say it all the time, fight wasn't a robbery, it was just a close fight. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to solve that problem. I mean, you could solve the problem of, I mean, to me, it's like if I'm a commissioner and I see a fight and it's so patently obvious that it was like 3 10-8 rounds for one guy, and you've got a judge that gives it to the other guy, then it's like, okay, we're not going to hire this guy to judge anymore because he's clearly an idiot. But in a case like last night, it's just like, there's nothing you can do. I don't think there's an answer. I don't think there is an answer to the problem of close fights. And there are going to be a lot of close fights because at the UFC level, when you get to the UFC level, and then you get all the way up to the championship level at UFC level, the guys are so good that you're going to have a lot of really, really, really close fights. And honest to God, I just don't think there's anything that you can do to guarantee that the right guy wins all of these close fights. I just don't think it can be done.
And again, it's like De La Hoya Mosley too. You know, De La Hoya complained so much that he landed more punches. But if you were watching it ringside, Mosley was killing him to the body with shots. And, you know, a judge can see that, a computer can't.
I mean, it would be boring. Believe me. There's a reason that we have 3 5-minute rounds and 5 5-minute rounds for championship fights, because it would be boring to do what I'm suggesting. But if you really want to find out who wins fights, then you don't have time limits, which obviously is impossible. But trust me, you're going to get winners with no time limits. I mean, the fight may go 8 hours, like at the turn of the century, the
Frank
last century.
Frank A. Gotch would endorse this heartily.
Exactly. I mean, that's... Listen, you got two guys, and they're trained to go all out for 25 minutes. You know, you can't train to go all out for 60 minutes or 90 minutes. I'm not recommending this, everybody. I'm just saying, if you want guaranteed winners, then you do no time limit. But you can't do that. And so as long as you've got this predetermined 15 or 25-minute time period, and you've got the best fighters in the world facing each other, you're not ever going to have a system that guarantees the right winner. It is impossible. All you can do is try to weed out the obvious morons that see a 10-8 round and think the other guy won. And you know, That does happen, but honest to God, it's pretty rare that something that egregious happens.
It happens in Texas, it seems, all the time. I mean, really, they just need better, smarter judges. At the end of the day, that's really all it comes down to. Maybe they could try, again, having five in before the five or something like that, where, again, I don't know, but it's on the fighters, but with that said, I mean, all of these bad judges, that's just the thing in all fight sports that, again, this doesn't happen in Major League Baseball or anything else. I mean, they at least try to have the cream of the crop, and it's really shameful that this has happened.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Been a long time since you missed a break like that, Mike.
I was due for
seven
that.
Full days.
Has not been my finest show, but still, everything remains. Damn it, there needs to be better judges. Stop with all the dumb judges. It's been a century of this. It always has been like this. It probably always will be like this. But, God, it sucks as a fight fan to have to deal with.
You know, the other thing, just very quickly, since we're almost out of time, I mean, I know there are bad decisions in boxing, and I know there are bad decisions in jiu-jitsu, and I'm sure there are bad decisions in wrestling as well. But you got to think about mixed martial arts. The more facets there are to this sport, the harder it is going to be to judge, and the more difficult it is going to be to differentiate between who won in a close fight between the best guys in the world. It's not like you're just judging on, was this guy able to pass the guy's guard and get dominant position? You know what I mean? You've got to judge based on their stand-up, their striking, their grappling on the ground, their effective grappling, their wrestling. There's so many different aspects that you've got to judge in any given fight, and you're doing that with the top guy. It's not like basketball where it's like, did the guy sink the basket or not? You know what I mean? There's the groundwork, there's the stand-up work, there's how hard did these strikes, which is also, you don't know, you only know when you're in there how close a submission might have been. I mean, I've done jiu-jitsu a long time. I know what I feel is like, okay, he was close or he wasn't close. You know, from looking at it, I can tell what I believe was close and not close. But honest to God, sometimes when you're in there, something feels a lot closer than it may look, or vice versa. So when you're looking at aspects like that, I mean, it's impossible to judge fairly all of these different aspects of a mixed martial arts event. We got to wrap it up, everybody. I'm sorry for ranting for so long. Leave it to me to ask that question last. Maybe we'll talk about this more next week. And of course, we'll talk about these issues on Wrestling Observer Radio, Figure Four Daily, and everything else as well at WrestlingObserver.com. I want to thank Mike, as always, for doing an awesome job. And everybody at Sports Byline USA, all of you listeners, thanks again. Take care, everybody. Talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.